This episode of the Kona Edge is brought to you by Wheel Science. If you're looking for world-class carbon wheels that are UCI approved, come with a lifetime warranty and shipped free worldwide, then check out Wheel Science. Get all the performance at half the price, and when you use the coupon code KONAEDGE at checkout, you'll get an extra 10% discount. To learn more, head over to thekonaedge.com/wheels to find out more, or click on the link in your podcast player now. That's thekonaedge.com/wheels.
This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Welcome on to this edition of the Kona Edge. My name is Brad Brown. It's good to be with you. Thank you so much for listening and downloading this podcast. And we head to Melbourne in Australia now to catch up with our next guest, Leslie West. Leslie, welcome on to the podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Brad. Thanks for having me.
Leslie, it's great to have you on, and that was one sentence. Straight away, I can tell that's not an Australian accent. Where are you originally from? You're not Aussie.
No, I'm not. Well, technically, no, I'm not Aussie, although I am now a citizen.
Okay.
No, I'm from Glasgow, born and bred.
In Scotland. Vastly
in
different.
Scotland.
Vastly yes. Different to Melbourne, Australia.
Yes, very different. Very different weather, which is pretty much why we upped and moved. I did make my way sort of gradually south through England and ended up in London for a few years, and then we made the big move across.
And no looking back. I mean, obviously climate wise you can't compare.
Oh no, that's it. In the lifestyle, just the outdoors and just very, very different. Missed family and friends at home, obviously. And you know, Scotland will always be home. Mm. But for now, Melbourne, certainly, yeah, Melbourne's home.
And as far as Australia goes, I mean, Melbourne is this. I know I'm probably going to alienate half of our Australian listeners, but Melbourne's the sporting capital. I mean, there's just so much outside of triathlon that goes on in Melbourne. I think of the Aussie Open tennis. I mean, there's so much that happens in Melbourne, isn't it?
Yeah, there's loads. I mean, obviously, Aussie rules is a big part of Aussie life. And there's just, you know, there's always something if you wanted to go and watch anything or people to run with, or just so many people just always out and about, regardless of the weather, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even though we get a bit of rain.
I was going to say, we were talking before we got on or recording that you said you're getting a bit soft after 6 years in Australia. You're now heading out with arm warmers and leg warmers. There's no way you'd ever be able to run, swim, bike, and if you had to go back to Scotland.
Oh, if I went home and still wanted to do triathlon, I guarantee almost everything would be indoors. I just, yeah. Our concept of what is cold is definitely very different now.
Absolutely. Tell me about your sporting background. Have you always been sporty growing up? What's your sort of, where do you come from?
Yeah, so my background was in netball. My mum played, my sisters played. I grew up with it from pretty young age, probably from about 7 or 8, and just always enjoyed out and about, you know, running around, always good at PE, really enjoyed it, but didn't really do any other sport other than that. Grew up with it, kept playing netball to a fairly decent level, sort of played age group national level. I mean, Scotland aren't really known for their netball and expertise, but you know, I've made my way up the ranks and played up until I moved to Australia, really.
And as far as the transition into triathlon, I mean, netball, obviously it's a team sport, and triathlon not so much, particularly the long stuff and non-drafting. It must have been a difficult transition for you?
No, not really. So basically what happened, I was doing a lot of netball back in London, and, you know, we were moving out to Australia, and the big dream was, great, I'm going to the home of netball. This will be brilliant. I'll find a team, I'll find a club. And I just found it really difficult in Melbourne, where I wasn't quite good enough to play at state level, and the level below that seemed to be a lot of social. Or if you didn't already know people, it was quite hard to get in on that club level. Which was disappointing because I'd had this big hope of keeping on playing. And then So I actually couldn't swim. I've been terrified of water pretty much my whole life. And it always just annoyed me. It wasn't I'm determined to get over this. I just found it really irritating that I had this irrational fear of water. So decided that the best way to get over it was to just give a triathlon a go. Give it a go and then find a coach and actually learn to swim. And I did that within a few months of us moving to Australia. And so, you know, I quickly immersed myself in the community and with my club. And so those people then became my friends and family and that are around us.
I find it interesting that you went the triathlon route. I mean, I understand the swimming, but there's a huge swimming culture in Australia. Why triathlon and not standalone swimming?
Oh, because I genuinely could not swim a stroke, so I couldn't rely on that. There'd been something about it that, you know, I think running has always come naturally to me. And obviously years of netball. I mean, I've got an incredibly high cadence when I run, which I put down to my years of netball. And, you know, I did a little bit of commuting and I just had seen this thing called triathlon and thought, oh, that sounds pretty good, but I'm going to have to get over this fear of water. So it was intrigue, really. Yeah. I certainly didn't expect to be a couple of years down the line and it's all-encompassing part-time job type thing. So.
How long ago was that? That's five, six years ago?
Five, 6 years ago, okay. Yeah.
So it's all been pretty recent. I mean, it's not that you've been around the sport for a long, long time.
Not at all. And even now we joke that I remember in my first season when I joined a club and a squad right away. So that was what I knew. And I just remember there was a bunch of people going to this place in Hawaii doing this thing called Ironman. And I just remember being really confused because I thought we did triathlon. So I couldn't work out what this Ironman thing was that they were doing. I'm like, oh, is this something different? Because I thought we were a triathlon club. Like, I had zero idea. You know, I kind of knew about the Brownlees because of the, you know, of being around the UK and the Olympics and stuff, but that was all I knew. And I've just fully absorbed myself in it.
You've obviously fallen in love with it. The first one didn't go too badly. Tell me about that first one.
Oh, the first one, we were laughing about this. It was actually almost 6 years ago this weekend. And I did a mini, so it was basically a mini try. So it was 300 meters, 10K bike, and I think a 3K run. And I think I was something like 45th in my age group out of the water. I can't remember what I did in the bike, but I managed to run my way into seventh. Which, you know, I was pretty happy about. And at that point, it was, okay, this is pretty good because I get to pass people. Because I was so far back out of the water, but I got to run past everyone. I could definitely get better at this. And that was it. I sort of looked up, tried to find a club, and, threw myself right into it.
Yeah, it's amazing the psychological benefit of being a weaker swimmer as opposed to being a weaker runner and passing people as opposed to being passed. That plays a huge thing, particularly when you go longer.
Huge. Yeah, 100%. Like, and I remember doing one race on our local tri circuit, and I think this was before I'd done any long course, and something had, I'm going to say gone wrong, but actually gone right, and I think I came off the bike in the lead in my age group, and all of a sudden I was like, well, I don't know what to do because I'm usually chasing someone and now I'm being chased and I don't know how to handle this. And, you know, I just ran, just did what I could, you know, it was 5K. But it was totally different psychological feeling of being chased rather than I'm always chasing people.
Tell me about the move to long course. It's one thing doing shorter triathlons, but deciding to go half Ironman distance, full Ironman distance, that's a totally different beast.
Yeah, so I did the duathlon worlds in 2015 in Adelaide, and then people were talking about Ballarat 70.3, which was in the December. And I don't know, I think I realized that I really enjoyed going for long rides and I liked doing the long runs. And we'd sort of worked out that I was never going to be a fast swimmer, but I can get a pace and pretty much hold on to it. But I just enjoyed the thought of going out and riding for, four, five, 6 hours or doing those long runs. So decided, oh yeah, I'll give Ballarat a go. And interestingly, because it was part of the qualifying year for Sunnycoast Worlds in 2016. So, you know, all the big guns started coming out because, of course, everybody wanted to qualify for the home world champs. And I had no idea even at that point what's this world champs thing. I didn't really know what I was doing. But yeah, I decided to give Ballarat a go. So that was my first 70.3. So that was December 2015. And yeah, really enjoyed it, but made a bunch of rookie errors on nutrition and pacing and lost my time and chip, and everything that could happen just went wrong. But it was great fun.
Isn't that always the case, though, with the longer thing? That everything never goes 100% right. There's always something you can improve on, and I think that's part of what keeps us coming back for more.
Yeah, no, I agree, because I think, once you get to that point, and I think, you know, the race I did after that, that was the December, and the February I did Geelong. And the thing that just kept, it made me go, well, no, wait a minute, I've made these mistakes, I reckon I can fix them for next time. So you fix those things, or you aim to fix those things, and then there's something else. But we're those sort of A-type personalities as well, that I think that you're never going to be quite satisfied. You're always going, well, I can always do this a bit better, or sort out something. And I think it does come down to how you then deal with those things on race day, but also afterwards.
Have you always been competitive? I mean, in the netball side of things, have you always wanted to? Do you think that is key to being successful at Ironman, and particularly racing on the Big Island?
Yes, but what I always say is, I think there's also, I'm going to say yes, but we're not competitiveness or mindset, and the ability to tap into a mindset. So yes, I've always been competitive. If I lied and said no, and people that know me heard this, they would call me out on it. But I also am competitive with myself as much as anything. But the way I always see it is, am I always quicker than other people? Physically, I don't know, but I have an ability, you know, to sort of push myself that little bit more and really work hard and tap into that mental side of it. And I don't know, we're not that, I think you can train yourself to do it, but I also think some people have that naturally and maybe others not so much, which can come through as being competitive.
It's interesting you say that, because I think that also can come from environments that you grow up in, that if you, not that you've had a tough childhood or that sort of thing, but growing up in harsher conditions, I think may also cultivate that in someone. And I know this is probably a difficult question to answer, but obviously Scotland is not, from a conditions point of view, it's a tough place to grow up in. It's harsh weather-wise. Do you think some of it could have come from there?
I don't know. I mean, I did indoor sport. You know, I didn't really play outdoor sports. There's not, other than playing football, as in, well, soccer, but, you know, there aren't that many, you know, sports that people do outdoors, which is actually, you know, which is a shame. And it's one of the things that brought us to Melbourne, is that lifestyle. I don't know. I think it's funny, because my mum will sort of, I think to her, she's being serious, and she'll say, I don't know where you get your competitive streak from. And you sort of look at them going, really? Oh, you know, and I've got nephews back home, and they are competitive. You know, they're little, they love to run, they play football. They're pretty competitive. So clearly there is something in the family that sort of filters down.
Yeah, it's funny. I've got a daughter who's like that, my youngest, and everything is a race. Like everything. Yeah. And she hates losing. She is going to be an absolute monster if she ever gets into sport later on. But yeah, I think it's funny. Some people are born with it. Some people obviously try and cultivate it, but either you have it or if you don't. I sort of agree with that. What are some of the things strategies that you employ in times in a race where it's tough and everyone's hurting? Because let's be honest, Ironman is not easy. You go through patches where it hurts and you need to push on, or if you back off, you're not going to get the result you're chasing. What do you do to push on?
I think, so because I think for me, and sometimes it's a good thing, sometimes it's a bad thing, because I'm always kind of chasing by the time I come out of the water, whether I realize it or not, you know, there's something in me going, you know, pushing me along to try to make up for the lost time. And then there's, but then there's partly that, well, I've passed all these people, well, I can't let up now because then they'll think I've blown up, or they'll go, well, you shouldn't have gone so far to start with, you know. So there's kind of that, once I've passed someone, I'm thinking, well, I better not let them pass me again. So I think there's elements of that. And then it's just, I think I've just learned that I've just got that little bit more and breaking things down into chunks, you know. So especially in the run, I think, and that for me is just breaking it down to chunks, whether or not it's mentally going, well, just get to the next aid station and starting to reason with myself. You know, well, if you get to the next aid station, you can maybe walk for a little bit, or it, whatever, depends on the race day. So yeah, and I just know that if I get to a finish line and I haven't pushed myself as hard as I can, then I'll be disappointed, regardless of whether somebody's beaten me or I'm the top or I'm the bottom. It doesn't matter. It's knowing that I've drained every last bit out of me. If I haven't done it, I know I'll be disappointed.
Let's talk about the move to Ironman and particularly the focus on Kona. Talk me through that and that process.
So actually, it didn't quite go to plan, the road to my first Ironman. I had decided in about April 2017, so 2 years ago now, I decided I wanted to do WA, so Busselton, in the December. So I was going back to Scotland and I was doing Edinburgh Half in the July, and then we decided that would be a great time, you know. Spoke to my coach and he agreed, yep, I was ready for this. And I think what we'd seen was that, like I said, I'm not a fast swimmer and, you know, I can run pretty quick, but where I really came into my own was I have an ability to hold that pacing. So we thought, like, I'll be pretty good at the sort of that stronger where you need the strength. So plan was for first Ironman, December 2017, build, everything going really well. We were tracking well. There was a great squad of us. And then all of a sudden, 3 weeks out, I had a stress fracture in my femur. So 3 weeks out from race day, game over, I'm on crutches, doesn't happen. So I was devastated, to say the least. And that in itself was mentally really tough because I was so ready for it. As it turned out, that was the year that the swim was cancelled because a shark was spotted partway through. So probably not the worst thing anyway. Well, for me, it would have been good because I can't swim. But, you know, it wouldn't have been the ideal situation to get there. So instead, you know, it was a case of rehab. Had a great doctor on my side, did my rehab to the T. And it's interesting even that, because people will say to me, you know, I started with 30 seconds run, 90 seconds walk, and 10 times. And that was my session. And people were saying, oh, but I bet you do more. But no, I play by the rules. So there wasn't a second one. It wasn't a second less. It was precisely. And that is what I see is getting me through. So that was sort of this time last year. So 2018, I had started back running and, you know, I was back to, had done a lot of riding, and we decided I was ready to do Cairns. So did Cairns 2018 last year and managed, so that was my first one, and managed to win my age group and get my lucky spot to Kona.
That's amazing. Was that the plan? Was it to go and the onslaught was to do well enough to get a slot to Kona, or was it a case of, you know what, we won, we have to go?
I wouldn't say it's the plan, but I think, like, we none of us talked about it as such, you know. I didn't talk about it with my coach or really even my husband, you know. We knew what my ability was in each of the three legs. We knew that I race hard. So I race much harder than I train, which is, you know, better than the other way around. So we know that I know how to race well, and that if I pulled it off, I had the potential to do really well. What I found out afterwards was that my coach said, you know, he basically fully expected me to basically do what I did. So it wasn't the aim, but we knew that if I pulled it off, then I would get a spot. But it was just came down to, at the end of the day, this is my first one. I've had a rocky build up to it. Just go out there and do what you can, you know, learn from it. That was sort of the expectation.
We talk about the difference between climate from Scotland to Melbourne. The difference to Scotland to Kona is probably worlds apart. You can't get two more opposite. How did you deal with that? Obviously, you'd been in Australia for a few years, so it wasn't like straight coming out of Scotland, but it must still be tough racing there.
Yeah, and I mean, we came straight out of Melbourne winter, which was pretty cold. There was one ride, so I qualified at Cairns. I qualified with one of my squad mates, which was just amazing that he, you know, we did a lot of our training together and we're very similar, so that was great. But there was a ride we did up in the hills, and at one point it hit -2, -3 degrees. You know, it was cold. So, and then, you know, 4 weeks later, there you are in Hawaii. It was hard. We built in a few, sort of, I want to call it heat chamber sessions, you know, at home in the room with the heating on, with the dryer going and on a wind trainer for 30 minutes. But that was pretty much, you know, that was pretty much all I could really do for it. And then just went out there. I think we were there about 11 days before to try to acclimatise as much as possible.
And the experience as a whole, has the bug bitten now that you just want to keep going back, or is it, you know, we tick that box?
No, I want to go back. We loved Hawaii anyway. So my husband and I went there on our honeymoon. We'd gone in 2016 to watch Kona, then went back, you know, last year. So we love Hawaii. The drive's definitely there. Like you said before, you know, there's always things that don't go right. And whilst I had a good race in Kona, and I think especially for a first timer, you know, it was a good race, but there are, you know, lists and lists of things that I would do differently or want to change or improve on. So no, I'd love to go back. I haven't done another race since, and I won't ahead of this year's Kona, mainly because I have no money left, because it's like bankrupt you. I'm not a one and done. I think I'd really like to go back and give it another good shot.
What are some of the things you'd like to do differently or improve on?
I think just my pacing a little bit. Like I said, I'm always playing catch up, and whether I realise it or not, is it a fault? I don't know. We haven't quite worked it out yet. I went a little bit hard. I also dropped my bike nutrition going down Kuakini. So within about 10K of the bike, I had dropped 5 or 6 gels. So unfortunately, I did the rest of the bike on not very much. So, you know, little things that you would just... But I think also, you know, I did absorb it. I don't think I let it get to me. But it just... You just come back with more experience, just some little things that you just pick up on.
Talk to me about life outside of triathlon. What do you do for a living? How do you get the balance right?
So I work in marketing analytics. I'm a statistician by background, and I've been working in sort of marketing media consulting for the past 10 plus years. Balance? Yeah, I don't know what that is.
is there such a thing?
Yeah, I've never heard of this thing. To be honest with you, interestingly, I think, training does take up a lot of my time, but I love it. So the way I see it, you know, and I remember people before would say, well, when do you see your friends? I'm going, well, I see my friends at every single training session. I see my friends more there, more than I would, you know, otherwise. So it is just the little things and going for coffees. I'm actually on a 2-week sort of end of season break at the moment so that I can build through for the rest of the year. So it's just doing just enjoying the small things, spending time with my husband, who interestingly has just taken up triathlon for the first time, even though he vowed he was never doing it. So so that brings a little something different into the house as well.
I was going to say, he sounds like he's pretty supportive. And you have to have, if you don't have a partner who's active in the sport, you need that support, particularly if you're going to go all the way to Kona.
100%. Like, I couldn't ask for more support. I think he came from a, sort of fairly high level sporting background as well. And so we've both always been fairly independent in wanting to achieve different things in sport or just general, life. And so we're fairly independent, which helps. But he, you know, now just goes, well, as long as I get a good holiday out of it, that's fine. So apparently, you know, and it became known as it was the glamour races. So apparently Kona does count. That's fine. he'll go back there. But yeah, no, it makes such a difference. And having supportive friends, like I say, you know, I mean, I've made some great friends through our squad, and they're just, you might be competitive with people on the course, but you know, they're some of my best friends off, which just helps so much.
Absolutely. How much of your success do you think is simply down to hard work? How much of it is genetics and how much of it is luck?
I think genetics, yeah, there is some there. You know, when I'm probably naturally athletic. You know, my mum was a PE teacher. We've always been active. So, yep, I do think there's definite elements of genetics. But I think if you were to ask, you know, anyone who knows me and sees how hard I train, there's so much of it comes down to hard work. You know, especially from the swimming, you know, I'm not exaggerating when I say I couldn't swim a stroke when, you know, 5-6 years ago. There's just consistent hard work. And so, yeah, I think you need to have both luck. Is it luck when things go right on race day? I don't know, maybe. Do you create your own luck? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about the luck thing.
It's interesting. Gary Player, the golfer, South African golfer, used to say that the harder you work, the luckier you get. And it sounds like that's something you sort of believe in.
Yeah, I think, yeah, and I think it's probably right. That's probably, you know, is it that, you know, people, I don't think many people within triathlon actually would look and say that somebody's been lucky, because I think everybody who's in it knows how hard people have to work to get their Kona spot or just to finish. You know, it's not always about, you know, being at that top end. It's hard work. Mm. And, you know, people put it in. And I think there's a lot of respect across the whole triathlon community for anybody who completes any distance of race.
What's the secret to qualifying for Kona? Is there a secret or is it just hard work?
For me, it's having a coach who knows what they're doing. My coach is a former pro himself, has coached many people to Kona. You know, so for me, it's a coach. It's having those people around you. It's hard work. That's consistency. Consistency for me is the one key element. And by consistency, it's repeatedly turning up to every session you're meant to be at, making sure that, you know, you're at every swim squad, that you're at every run squad, paying attention to all the little things, the diet, the nutrition, just all those things, you know, they do all build up and they come together.
Yeah, it's little things that, if you think about it, if you leave one out now, it's not going to make too much of a difference. But the cumulative effect of missing the odd session or not watching what you're eating or drinking, those things add up and compound. And the flip side of that's true as well. When you don't miss sessions and you are eating well, that also compounds on the positive side.
Yeah, I think that's it. But also just enjoying what you do. You know, I don't think Ironman is it for everyone. And I mean, that from a point of view, if somebody doesn't enjoy going and doing 4 or 5 hour rides, then probably Ironman isn't for you. But I think there is a lot of, you know, that's the ultimate goal. I don't think it has to be for everyone. But I think if you enjoy the process, and it sounds cliched, you know, and that whole enjoying the process, but I do think it's true. You know, if you enjoy those long rides, long runs, you know, going out the house at 5:30 on a Saturday morning and not getting home till 3 p.m., if you enjoy it, then, you know, that's what makes it much more bearable and it makes getting there, I think, even just that bit sweeter when you get that race finish that you want, because you know that you've worked hard for it, so it's an achievement.
Yeah, I mean, I was having this conversation with a friend of mine who's doing his first Ironman this coming weekend, and he's absolutely terrified. He's petrified for this. He's done the work. I mean, I've seen his training. I know what he's done. And he'll only know this after the fact, but I always say that an Ironman is the reward for the hard work you've put in. It's such a cool day. It's great fun. And as much as it's daunting and scary, the distances you have to do, for me, the daunting bit is the actual 6 months, year before that race that makes it really hard.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's just interesting because I remember on the morning of Cairns, put my wetsuit on, and it's probably one of the calmest I've felt before a race because, and I think I just knew I had done everything. I had ticked every single box. So it literally was a case of whatever happens today happens. I can only control what I can control. And, you know, I had full faith in the program that I had and everything else. So, yeah, I was completely calm because it's like, all right, I've done harder sessions, it feels like, than what I'm about to do. That turned out not to be true. It was the hardest day. But it went in fully prepared and fully ready mentally for it as well.
Okay, toughest question of our chat today. I come to you, I've got a contract for one of the professional netball teams in Australia, but the condition is you have to give up triathlon. Would you go back to netball?
Nah, my netball days are done. Plus, I'm like 5'3", so there's no way I'm getting a game for any team in Australia. No, that's I'm perfectly happy where I am, as are probably my knees and my ankles and all my fingers and everything else that used to get hurt with netball.
And then, just to wrap up, Leslie, are you going to be around the sport forever? Are you going to be one of those people who are going to be chasing podium finishes in your 80s?
Oh, I'd like to think so. I really hope I'm around for a while. We, within our club, you know, within our squad, we have people. We've got a guy who's, I think Kenny, moves up to maybe 76 to whatever it is, 70 or 75 to 79 this year. You know, and he's won world championships. We've got, you know, other people who are mums, who are dads, and they've come and they've gone, but they've still sort of remained around. And those people to me are the ones that I sort of look to as going, no, it's not just for now. You know, even if you take a step back at any point, it's still always there. And I think that's what I like about the sport. It's, you know, you can do it at any age. And, you know, other sports that have a bit of a lifetime, these ones, no, they keep going.
Good to hear. Well, Leslie, it's been great catching up. I look forward to talking about the individual disciplines and particularly your swimming and what you've done to get better over time. But we'll save that for next week. Thanks for your time on the Kona Edge today.
Great. Thank you.
If you've enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge, I want to invite you to check out the Coach Parry Training Club. The Coach Parry Training Club is the essential resource for anyone at any stage of their triathlon journey. Whether you're just starting out in the sport and training for your first sprint distance race, or if you've been around the block a few times and are looking to take your Ironman performance to the next level, then the Coach Parry Training Club can help you. Developed by double Olympic and Commonwealth Games triathlon coach Lindsay Parry and myself, the Coach Parry Training Club is the go-to online platform for your training needs. It's like having a coach in your pocket. Get 20% off when you join the Coach Parry Training Club by using the coupon code KONA at checkout. Head over to thekonaedge.com/coach or click on the link in your podcast player now. That's thekonaedge.com/coach.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.